on this week's 51%, she wants to prepare and propel women to take their equal share of leadership positions across every sector by 2025.
The only way we will normalize women's leadership is by having women leaders.
And U.S. service members are marrying each other more often. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
Walking among our people, there's someone straight and strong to lead it from desolation in a broken world.
Gloria Felt is taking her Take the Lead message about women and power to the Omega Women's Leadership Center at the Omega Institute for Holistic Studies in Rhinebeck, New York, at the end of July. Felt is co-founder and president of Take the Lead, which was launched in 2014. It's an initiative to bring women to leadership parity by 2025. She is the author of No Excuses, 9 Ways Women Can Change How We Think About Power. Her upcoming workshop is a spin-off of a workshop at Omega a few years ago.
I had the pleasure of leading one of my 9 Leadership Power Tools to Advance Your Career workshops, I think 2 years ago. And I found that there's one particular exercise that so captures women's imagination, and we needed more time for it. So I created a whole new workshop this time called Your Power Journey, and we're going to focus on that particular part of the workshop this time, and I'm so excited about it.
So will you offer some details about this power journey on which several women will be going?
Yes. What we do is we start by looking at, we literally diagram our life. We diagram our life's journey and what have been the roadblocks, what have been the moments of opportunity, what have been those defining moments that changed everything for us? What have been those times when we just thought, I can't go on? What are those times where we had an amazing epiphany and or some major life event that made us take a different course? When did we know we had the power to innovate, create, make life better, propel ourselves forward to a new place? We take a lot of time to look at that, to think about what have we learned from each one of those, and to share those things with each other and gain as much insight as we can from it. And of course, since I'm your basic practical activist person, by the time we're done, we will have created our power journey going forward. Where do we go from here? How do we get there?
So let's talk about taking the lead. I've changed it from take to taking because I feel we're in the process of doing this, as evidenced by the number of women seeking political office. It's astounding. The numbers have grown tremendously, particularly since 2016. And what are you seeing? I know it's happening on many fronts, not just politically, but politically is what's most apparent to the public eye. And what are you seeing? Are you inspired, encouraged?
I am always encouraged and optimistic. I believe that, as Dr. Martin Luther King said, the moral arc of the universe is long and it bends toward justice. So I always think there is reason for optimism, but it's never easy. I'll tell you the story of how I came to actually write the book, No Excuses, 9 Ways Women Can Change How We Think About Power, that ultimately became the organization Take the Lead, that is helping women taking the lead today. And it actually started with a look at why women in 2008, Elle Magazine asked me to write an article about women running for office. And they thought it was at that moment that it seemed like we might have our first woman president for the first time, if you can remember that moment. And they thought that the story would be women would be racing to run for office since there was a woman setting the role model at the top of the ticket. Well, it turned out that I immediately discovered, in fact, that despite the fact that there are now dozens of organizations, Democratic, Republican, nonpartisan, young, old, it doesn't matter, that help women run for office, that at that point in time, the real story was women weren't running. They were half as likely as men ever to even think about running for office. Now, I quickly also found out that the dynamics and the data were almost exactly the same, regardless of sector. And that's why Take the Lead's work is cross-sector, frankly, because it's not just about politics. It is about women having leadership roles in business, in entrepreneurship, in corporate, in nonprofit organizations, across the board. We need to have gender equality in leadership everywhere. And the barriers and the biases and the internal barriers that were still holding women back really had to do with women's relationship with power. And one of the things that helps you get over that barrier of not wanting to assume power in a culture that still doesn't necessarily treat you very well if you appear powerful as a woman is getting angry. And so in that respect, I think women can thank Donald Trump for giving them enough anger that they could overcome whatever barriers they may have had internally to taking on the difficult. I mean, it's not easy to run for office. You lose your privacy. You are subject to all kinds of attacks, and many of them are very personal, and women don't really like that. But if you get angry enough, you're willing to overlook that, to take it on, and just keep going. And that's what's really hopeful about today. But anger alone is not enough to sustain. So what we need is to use that energy, the anger energy, but also to develop a vision energy so that we start putting out an agenda that will truly lead women to full equality and parity in every aspect of life, or else it won't matter that we have more women in office.
So what is needed beyond the anger to propel us forward? What characteristics, attributes, you know, what's needed?
I love that question so much. It's a wonderful question. And I that's really where the focus of the entire program that I've developed for Take the Lead specializes. And what we do is we start with a deconstructing power, understanding what it is, understanding that it's like a hammer. You can build something with it or you can break something apart. It doesn't have any characteristics of its own, because so much of what has been holding women back has been that we have been subject to the really negative aspects of power, and we don't want that. We don't want to be the oppressors, and that's a good thing. We don't want to lose that. So that's one of the characteristics, is we need to understand what power is, and we need to take the locus of that power back inside of ourselves, because women are still socialized to think first about what other people think about us. We are objectified in the media. We are objectified in pop culture. We are objectified every day from the moment we're born, much more than boys are, than men. So we have to take that locus of power back inside of ourselves. And when we do that, we can become much more intentional about what we want to accomplish, because we know we can embrace our internal power to get there. And then you need your specific tools. You really have to have some specific tools and skills. So I think that those tools and skills break down into three different buckets. And again, this is part of the core curriculum. The first bucket is self-definitional. You need to know who you are, where you came from, how you want to define yourself, what you want other people to think about you, and what your assets are. You need to analyze, what are my strengths? Where can I really make the biggest impact on the world, or where do I have the best opportunity to succeed because I have these talents, or I have this knowledge, or I have these resources? The second bucket is the counterintuitive power tools, and these are so much fun. These are all the things that your mother told you never to do. Embrace controversy, love chaos, learn how to use chaos to your advantage, and what I call wear the shirt. In other words, let people know what your convictions are. Let people know where you stand, what your highest values are, and what you believe so strongly that if you have to violate those values, you will walk away. The third bucket is the change leadership power tools, or the systems change power tools, whichever you prefer to call them. And those are important, and those are almost never taught in leadership programs. But what really gives women this sense of being able to embrace their power and use it with intentionality and authenticity and even joy is to understand that there are ways that you can learn to thrive in the world as it is, but you can also change the world. And you do that by understanding the principles of change leadership and movement building and how you use your story, how you can tell your story to help other people understand where you're coming from and to make the kind of change that you want to have happen. And the same principles, they're not easy, but they're also not complicated. So you can change the world.
So how do women go on to take leadership roles with confidence, assertion, and all of that, and not be perceived as bossy or other terms that could be considered negatively that would be assigned to women, but not to men acting similarly?
Mm-hmm. Well, do you remember when you were kids, you used to say, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names can never harm me? It's one of the things you have to learn as you grow and as you grow up. You just have to learn what are the things that you are going to, you'll take a risk, and if that risk involves people saying bad things about you, so what? What is going to happen? It's not going to kill you. It's not going to change the world. You know, it's not going to change much of anything. We have to learn to be willing to take those risks sometime, because the only way we will normalize women's leadership is by having women leaders. And the only way we will have women leaders is for women to have the courage and willingness to take the risks, to run, and sometimes they'll fail, or to put their hat in the ring for a higher level position in their company. And sometimes they won't get it, but sometimes they will. And the more we normalize, the more we see women in leadership, the less we will have those negative reactions to women leaders, because it will just be normal.
So where do you see Take the Lead going?
Mm-hmm. Well, when we started this conversation, we were talking about the fact that so many more women are running for office now than they were a decade ago when I started researching why women weren't running for office. And so I think one of the answers to the question is that we're in this moment, we're in this incredible moment, it's a strategic inflection moment when we have the justice case for women in leadership. We have the wind under our wings with the Me Too movement that has cracked open an egg of conversation that has never happened before, in at least not in my memory, and I don't think probably in millennia. And we have the business case that shows that companies that have more women in their upper leadership do better financially. So we've never had that all at the same time. We also have women who are prepared to take on these roles, because women have been earning the majority of college degrees for the last 20 years. So as organizations are looking for women who are prepared and ready to take on leadership roles, women have the capabilities. Women are prepared for those. It's up to us, though, to take that moment. And that's what Take the Lead is here to do. We're a fairly new organization. We're just about 4 years old formally. I mean, formed 5 years ago at the end of 2013, but we formally launched in 2014. So we're just 4 years old. And we've said from the beginning that we don't need to do everything, that we will scale through collaboration, and that we want to leverage all of the capabilities that are out there. But the fact is that so many of the other women's leadership programs weren't moving the dial. And so we would add, and this is what we want to concentrate on, what we are concentrating on, is the understanding of power, a sophisticated understanding of power, transforming the meaning of it to one that women love and will embrace. And we will continue to do that. We have a program now that is an intensive, immersive version of the curriculum, and that is called 50 Women Can Change the World. What we do in that is we teach the power concepts, we teach the 9 leadership power tools, we have women do their individual strategic leadership action plans, but the secret sauce is these women who are together for this program for at least 3 months or so form a cohort, and they start helping each other. And that's a key and critical thing that we will continue to build upon. And it's the how do we help women get to know their tribe, their cohort, and help each other move forward. So we'll continue with our comprehensive program of training, mentoring, and coaching, role modeling, and thought leadership for both individuals, but also for companies and for organizations. And we're pretty sure that we can make some very useful changes in organizational culture in companies that hire us to do these things. And we also are very sure that by having 50 women in a room working with each other and sharing their plans with each other and learning these power tools with each other, that these women go forth and they do change the world. We've seen this happen for women in nonprofits, for women in media and entertainment already, women in healthcare already. We just did our first program for them. We'll be doing one for women in journalism. We'll be doing one for women in finance. We're on the drawing boards is one for women in tech. So we're looking at sector by sector, and that's going to be our biggest strategy for the next year.
So we can't control timing, right? I mean, look at what's happened since you co-founded Take the Lead. There is just so much happening with women empowerment. Who could have envisioned the way in which this would happen? And here it is at your doorstep.
And while we thought, in 2013, we thought that it was already that moment, but the Me Too movement times up and women getting engaged in politics in a way they never have before, those are things we could certainly not have predicted and that really have put some additional wind under our wings. But here's what I know. If you don't take these moments in history when they happen, they go away really quickly. So my call to action for all of us is take this moment, do one more thing every day than you're already doing to help move yourself or another woman forward. And if we do that for one generation, we will be at leadership parity and we will have a very different culture. I'm not saying that having women in leadership makes everything perfect. We know there are women leaders who are not perfect, who maybe emulate the male leadership they have seen, or they may just not have the skills. I'm not saying that having every woman who becomes a leader is going to be perfect. What we do know, however, is that having gender diversity really does make a difference. It really makes for better decisions. It makes for better organizations because you have those different perspectives and you understand each other better. And there are so many reasons why it makes for a better world as well as for a better economy. So this is the moment. This is our moment. But if we don't take it, I promise you, we can go backwards just as easily. And my life is devoted to not only not letting us go backwards, but to making darn sure that women keep going forward.
And I heard from a politician recently who said, to your point of now is the time, the camera of history is rolling. So there it is. I wanted to switch gears. And since you were the president and CEO of the National Planned Parenthood, what you thought of the Supreme Court justice opening selection? And just to share with you, I had in my inbox from one of the preeminent women's organizations an email saying, make no mistake, it is about Roe v. Wade. What do you think?
Well, I do want to make clear that I'm very proud of the 30 years career that I had with Planned Parenthood and ending as being the national president for 9 of those years, but I have been away for 12 years. So I don't presume to know everything that's going on in the movement, and I don't presume to speak for the organization or for the issues. But what I can say is from the perspective of who sits on the Supreme Court and what's likely to happen, frankly, Roe v. Wade has been so eviscerated that it's not much of a protection anymore. And I believed 12 years ago, and I believe still, that the only solution is grassroots engagement in politics. This is a democracy, folks. You have to stay engaged in it. We just, you know, I never can remember if it was John Adams or Thomas Jefferson who said, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. And I really believe that where we need to head is to have legislative policy at the federal level that recognizes women's human and civil rights to own and control their own bodies. And until we have that, we will keep fighting the same old battles until we have equality and parity in leadership. We will keep fighting the same old battles. And I'm telling you, the fundraising letters that I see now are exactly the same ones that were written 15, 20, 25 years ago. It's time to get over that. The courts aren't going to protect us, face it. They're not going to protect us. It's going to have to be really solid, sustained human individual engagement in grassroots politics. And that's really the answer.
That was Gloria Felt, co-founder and president of Take the Lead, which shows women how to lead and think about power in new ways. America's service members are marrying each other more often. Of the married women in the armed forces, about half have another service member as their spouse. And that's created some challenges for the Pentagon. Steve Walsh reports from San Diego.
Jennifer Gabbard is making room in the cabinets before the rest of her things arrive. She just drove across country to California from her last duty station in Boston.
In a keep pile and a get rid of pile.
A Navy nurse and chief petty officer, Gabbard is now retiring from the military and finally reuniting with her husband, John, at the home they own in La Mesa. He also spent his life in the Navy, and Jennifer says that helps.
You don't have to explain things. Things are just easier, I think. People think it's harder. But it really isn't. You understand each other.
Jennifer and her husband are among about 84,000 service members who are married to another member of the military. It's a group large enough that the military is beginning to focus on their needs. Janet Wolfenbarger is a retired four-star Air Force general. She chairs a Pentagon Commission on Women, which is looking at dual military couples.
It really is about national security to be able to attract and retain high-caliber individuals in this country who want to serve.
The Pentagon knows when a couple can't live together for long periods, they start talking about whether it's time for one of them to get out. Overwhelmingly, it's the women who end up leaving. Now that she's pregnant, Marine Major Christina Upton is thinking about that choice.
I've been a very good Marine for 20 years, and my focus has always been on my career. And I don't really know how to do something at half speed.
She's leaning toward retiring while her husband, Major Chris Upton, says he's seen other military couples raise children.
Marines that are married to other Marines that do it, and they do it very well, and they do it very successfully. And I know that we could do it as well. So if she wanted to stay in, I would definitely support her.
It's those future top women leaders who are most at risk. 45% of married women in the military are married to someone else in the service. 57% of married women in the Marine Corps are married to someone in the Corps. But it's also about finding ways to grow the overall force. Pentagon data shows up-and-coming millennials are overall less willing to sacrifice their own family life to serve.
That's definitely something that we've discussed.
For sure.
Chief Petty Officer Second Class Cody Lipman and Seaman Lauren Mano are just starting their careers in the Coast Guard.
It's really sad where, like, my friends, if they become mothers and they feel really limited, and they actually have to quit the service. But I'm gonna try to go as far as I can.
But if we have kids and one of us is gonna get stationed completely across the country, we would probably call it quits.
Each couple says their service makes an effort to keep them together. In 2016, a Navy policy declared keeping couples together should be the norm. The needs of the Navy come first, but the rule is designed to encourage commanders to keep couples within at least 90 miles of one another. Angelina Gabriel is a chief petty officer in the Navy with three young boys in San Diego. Today she's home earlier than her husband, also a chief.
He's doing exercises and stuff now, so his schedule is anywhere between... No, baby. His schedule is anywhere between 4 or 5 in the morning to 8 o'clock at night.
They've deployed separately and once at the same time.
Our stressors is that a lot of times one of us is not here, and that's what's stressful. When my husband's not here, our children act a different way. I'm more lenient because I want to coddle the boys. I want to make sure they're okay because they're feeling the fact that their dad is not here.
The Pentagon's Commission on Women recommends that the Department of Defense set a universal policy, especially for the growing number of people married to someone else in another branch of the military. Given the numbers, these couples say the policy the military could never survive is preventing marriage among service members. I'm Steve Walsh in San Diego.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1513.